After Stebbins and Marquand escorted Linda to the carriage and set off for the hotel, Sam, Matt, Osgood, Ringo, Curly Bill, Lee Lindsay, and Don Brown made themselves comfortable around the office. Curly Bill commandeered the marshal's chair, the comfortable one, settling himself into it. Osgood scowled but made no effort to stake his claim to it.
Hell of a thing. A hell of a thing.
Everyone nodded agreement.
I didn't bring it up when Linda was here, but we sent a couple of riders from the patch to Yellowsnake Canyon for a look-see. Pete Green and Nick Fargo. Good men, fast riders. They took a string of extra horses along in case there were any survivors. Nary a one. They were all stone dead, men and women. Pete said it looked like all hell. Some had been finished off execution style with a bullet to the head. There was a couple of youngsters even, boys no more than 5 years old, with their brains bashed against the rocks. What kind of man kills a five-year-old boy?
Man, hell, they're a pack of mad dogs.
Black Angus must have gone plumb loco.
Not hardly. Mean as a poisoned snake, sure, but not crazy. He and his gang are slave hunters. They wanted young girls to sell, and they took them. They killed everybody else. If the boys had been old enough to take care of themselves on the trail, the slavers would have kept them along. They could always be sold as field hands or houseboys. But kids that young need looking after, and Jones couldn't be bothered.
You talk like you know something about the game.
Sam and I tangled with slave hunters once before.
Looks like we'll be tangling with them once again. You can see how Jones worked it. Slavers are always on the lookout for fresh prey. The wagon train was fresh meat. Maybe spotters put Jones onto them. Maybe he had the trail staked out, waiting for something like them to come along. His gang stole the pilgrims' horses. Then Jones came along the next day with the ponies in tow, playing the part of Al Jensen, Good Samaritan. That's how he ropes them in. He and the woman and Sonny Boy join up with the immigrants. That puts him in a position to size up their strengths and weaknesses, find out what kind of firepower they're packing. Who'll show fight and who won't? At Buckdun Station, they meet up with Simmons, accidentally on purpose. Simmons and his two sidemen ride along, and that puts five enemy guns in the immigrants' camp.
Six. The woman Carol's a killer, too. She gunned down the Gordon gal's paw.
Six.
Sam Simmons has sunk mighty low. I knew him back in the day. He was always hard and with no give in him. But I never figured him for no woman killer or nothing like that.
The ambush was set for Yellowsnake Canyon. That's where Black Angus made the strike. The rest of the Jones gang must have been nearby, waiting for a signal. Yellowsnake Canyon is a good place for a massacre. It's well off the trail. Nobody goes there. It's full of snakes. The killings might have gone undiscovered for a long time, and nobody would have known Black Angus was responsible.
It was pure blind luck that Linda Gordon got away.
Good luck for her and bad luck for Angus Jones.
A lot of men are gonna die because of that turn of fate. Starting with Dorado and Court Fane.
Where'll they sell the girls?
Not in the territory. No house or crib, no matter how low, would take the risk. It's a hanging offense, sure. Can't keep something like that secret for somebody to be bound to talk. The whoremongers would never reach trial. They'd be lynched outright. Nobody in these parts would stand for something that raw.
It won't be in these parts. Slavery may not be legal in Mexico, but it's alive and well, and that's a fact. The border is near. Jones will take themself to be sold into some Mexico City bordello, or to a rich padron on a rancho deep in the interior.
Makes sense.
That's where we'll find them.
And we will find them.
That's mighty tall talk, a tall order.
It can be done. Black Angus can be found. He'll leave a trail. About a dozen slavers and how many girls?
Seven. We've got a list of their names and descriptions from what Linda told us.
All that killing for seven girls.
They'll fetch a high price. Seven girls and maybe a few more they picked up along the way. Them and the slavers. They'll leave a trail, all right.
If they leave a trail, I can pick it up.
We know they set out from Yellowsnake Canyon. Linda Gordon survived to tell the tale and put a name on the slavers. That'll set them running. No shilly-shallying around. They'll make a beeline for Mexico. There's only a few places where they can cross a border with captive girls in tow, and wherever they cross, they're sure to be noticed. If we hurry, we can pick up their trail and catch up to them before they sell the girls off. Maybe.
Jones may make another try for Linda. Not himself. He's too well known to show his face in Tombstone. But there's plenty in his gang who'd do the job.
You reckon?
One person and only one can put Black Angus in Yellowsnake Canyon, and that's Linda Gordon. Without her to point the finger, there's no case. Jones is not the man to leave any loose ends.
Hell, he's already wanted throughout the territory for robbery and murder and a list of crimes as long as both your arms. Why would he bother about this one?
Oh, you said it yourself, Deputy. This is mighty raw, even for an outlaw or murderer like Black Angus. Killing women and children and selling young girls into whoredom is the sort of thing that sets a fellow an appointment with Judge Lynch. If Jones is ever taken alive, there's always a chance that his gang will bust him out of jail or his lawyers will win an acquittal. But not if he's taken out of jail at night by a citizens' uplift committee to be hanged by the neck from a tree.
Huh.
I don't know about playing White Knight or Sir Galahad, but Bob Farr was a friend of mine. If I've got to go through Angus Jones and the rest of them to get to Dorado in court, well then so be it.
That goes double for me.
Saving the girls has got to be our top priority.
Time is all important. Best distract while the captive girls are all bunched together. Once they're sold off and separated, we'll have 7 trails to follow instead of 1.
I'd surely like to go with you boys, but I can't.
Nobody's asking you to.
Well, right now, I'm the only law in Tombstone.
Ringo drew his gun, holding it up in plain sight.
Here's the only law I need.
We don't need no 10-star to give us his blessing. We can handle it ourselves.
Plenty of tough hombres in town, enough to form a posse to get after Black Angus.
Now, don't take it like that, fellas. I got responsibilities. I can't just lay down.
Why don't you go to Yellowsnake Canyon? You ought to feel right at home there with all them other yellow snakes.
Mexico's a big country. When some slavers cross the border, who knows where they'll be?
I know.
He came from behind the office, from the first cell to the right of the center aisle. Gila Chacon stood pressed against the near wall of his cage, facing the office, his hands at shoulder height, each gripping a vertical iron bar.
You shut your mouth, Mex. He don't know nothing. He's talking big, trying to get himself off the hook.
I wonder.
Let him talk. It won't hurt to listen.
He crossed to the rear of the office where he could see Gila Chacon better.
What is it you know, or think you know?
I know where Dorado is going.
Where?
What's in it for me?
You go to the hangman with all your teeth and no bones broken.
It takes more than that to frighten Gila Chacon.
Shaw, he's just talking, running his mouth in hopes of saving his worthless hide. He's got nothing.
In a matter of such importance, I would think that you would at least try to find out if my words are true. Which they are, I assure you.
Prove it.
I could not help but overhear the tragic tale of the so unfortunate Señorita Linda. She spoke of the woman who called herself Carol, who has a scar like a Z running down the side of her face.
So?
That scar, I put it there. Do not think ill of me for it, señores. She was trying to kill me at the time.
I'm listening.
Her name is not Carol. It is Carmen. Carmen Oliva. She is the half-sister of the Golden Man El Dorado.
Now I'm listening.
They have the same mother, Carmen and Dorado. A whore. And different fathers, both bastards. They have the same color hair, reddish-brown, like old dried blood. A color which suits them.
Did Linda say what color hair Carol had?
If she did, I didn't catch it.
Ask her. Women, girls, they notice such things. It is important to them. Ask her. She will tell you it is so.
We will if it's needful. Say Carol is Carmen Oliva, Dorado's sister. What of it?
There is more. You, senor, the man with the honest face. We spoke earlier today. I told you of my home in Pago, in Sonora.
That's right, you did.
Carmen, Dorado, and I all come from Pago. We grew up together. Once we were all great friends. With Carmen and me, it was more than friendship. She was my woman, my wife. I spoke too of my enemy in Pago who sent pistoleros to kill me, which is why I am in this stinking jail. Don Carlos is his name. Don Carlos de la Vega. He is a big man, the master of Pago. The padrón, a rich man. Carmen preferred him to me. She betrayed me. They tried to kill me. I escaped, but not before my knife marked Carmen with the scar. Don Carlos did not want her after that. She was very unhappy, but she got over it. She is a great whore, Ys Carmen. She has been with many men. She met her match in the outlaw Jones. Black Angus, you call him. Now they are lovers. How did Don Carlos get rich? Oh, I will tell you, senores. He is a slave trader, the biggest in Sonora, if not all Mexico. His men searched the land for fresh young girls, virgins, innocent, untasted, stolen away from their families, never to be seen by them again. Jones and Carmen and Dorado, they are slave hunters for Don Carlos. They take the captive girls to the great slave market at Pago to be sold at auction at the opera house. It has a name, La Casa de las Lloronas, the House of Crying Women. It is where the Apaches, the banditos, and the gringo slave hunters bring their captive women and girls for to sell. At the end of the summer raiding season, buyers come to Pago from all over Mexico, from Mexico City, Guanajuato, Tlaxcala, Veracruz, Durango, many more. Some come from as far as Guatemala and Salvador. Pimps, procurers, whoremongers, madams of high-priced bordelos, padrones from lonely ranchos in the hills, and others worse, oh, far worse. All come to the slave auction and they pay in gold. For them, it is like going to the market to buy cattle. Young virgins bring the best prices, and gringa virgins bring the highest prices of all. The House of Crying Women in Pago, that is where you will find Jones and Dorado, and the captive girls of whom the Senorita Linda spoke.
A fine tale, but how can you prove what you say?
At my trial, such as it was, I told of Don Carlos sending men from Pago to kill me. Ask him. He was there.
Gila indicated Osgood.
Sure, he told some cock and bull story about the men he killed. I didn't pay it no never mind, and neither did the jury.
Did he testify about any Don Carlos?
He might have, I don't recollect.
Look at the trial records and you will see that what I say is true.
Well, maybe he did name a certain Don Carlos, but so what? He was found guilty of stealing Judge Randall's horse and duly sentenced to hang. He sure didn't say nothing about no captive gals or slave auction, believe you me.
It did not affect my defense, so I did not bring it up.
That's mighty slim. Got anything else to back it up?
There is the matter of knowing Carmen's hair color without the Senorita Linda having spoken of it.
If Linda Gordon says this Carmen or Carol had red hair, that would be something in your favor. A small something. You might have met Carmen before or picked up some gossip in the cantinas. It proves nothing about Black Angus taking the girls to Pago.
You're a hard man to convince, senor.
You're trying to save your neck, so you'd say anything.
There are other Mexicanos in town, and many of them I know. I was among them before I was caught and put in jail. Ask them about Don Carlos and the slave market of Pago. Some of them are sure to know the truth.
We will. Anything else?
I could tell you much more about Carmen and Dorado, but it would prove nothing about them taking the girls to Pago. I can think of two ways to prove the truth of my words. Catch one of the Joneses' men and make him talk.
Easier said than done. We don't have any Black Angus men.
You might, if they come to kill the girl.
That's one way, maybe. An awful iffy one. What's the other?
Why, it is simplicity itself. Take me with you to Pago. If the girls are there, set me free and I will help you. If I lie, kill me and be done with it.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? Hell, you don't believe this jumped-up chicken thief, do you? He'd say anything to keep from hanging.
Parts of his story make sense. It explains why Dorado's teamed up with Black Angus and Quirt Fane.
Oh, bosh.
It might be true, and it might not be. It's worth checking on. The parts that can be checked. Ringo, you and Bill have spent some time in Mexico. This ring any bells with you?
I never been to Pago. You, Bill?
Not me, John. I've heard of it, though. A big market for white slaves, they say.
Well, I've heard of that, too, but that's all I know.
Women stealing is out of our line. It's a filthy game, and we wouldn't have nothing to do with it.
Which leaves us pretty much where we started. Still, it's a lead, no matter how slim. Let's say we head over to the hotel to have a word with Linda Gordon, Matt.
I'm game.
I've got some amigos over to the Mex side of town. Ringo and I'll prowl the cantinas, see what we can pick up on the grapevine. All right with you, John?
Sounds good, Bill.
Lee and I'll tag along if you boys don't mind.
Glad to have you.
You can go off on a wild goose chase if you want. I'm gonna stay right here. And right here's where Chacon's gonna stay till the hangman calls for him.
Let's go. Time's a-wasting.
Do not delay, senores. The auction in Pago comes soon.
When?
This coming Saturday, I believe.
If that don't tear it! The slave auction is Saturday, same day he's slated for hanging. If that don't prove to you fellas he's talking out of his hat to save his miserable hide, nothing will.
You will see that I speak the truth. And then you must come to Gila. I know Pago and its wicked ways. I have many friends there. You need me as a guide. Without my help, you will never get within a mile of the auction at La Casa. You will succeed only in going before a firing squad. You need me, hombres.
And all we gotta do is set you free?
Si, a fair trade. Better. My life for 7 young lives. A poor sinner for 7 pobrecitas. 7 poor, innocent young girls. And the lives of the men you seek, Dorado and the man Quirt Fain, the ones who killed your friend.
If you speak truly, Gila, we'll be back.
And if you're lying, I'll be back too, to peel the hide off you.
Matt and Sam headed for Allen Street, while the others went off to Tombstone's Mexican district. Low clouds bottomed the sky, hiding moon and stars. The air was heavy, but felt like it was going to rain. The crowd had cleared out of Allen Street, but the Hotel Earl was still crowded. Sam and Matt entered and walked up to the front desk. Manager Mark Fredericks was on duty behind the counter.
Howdy, Mark. What room's the Gordon girl in?
I'm not supposed to give that information out.
It's all right. We're with Colonel Davenport.
Oh, well, if that's the case, I'm sure it's all right. Room 207, across the hall from the Colonel's suite.
Thanks.
But you can't go in. The church ladies have the girl in tow. Mrs. Sanderson and Mrs. Whiteside. Couple of battle axes, if you ask me.
Matt'll get along fine with them. He's righteous, too.
A fine man, that Colonel Davenport. A great man.
A rich man.
Sam and Matt turned and went to the lobby, pausing at the foot of the grand staircase.
You go and talk to the girl, Matt. I want to look around, see what I can see.
Okay, Sam.
Matt climbed the stairs to the second floor, crossing the landing and going down the hall. The long carpeted corridor was lined with room doors on either side. Room 207 was near the landing on the right-hand side of the corridor. A gunman sat in a chair just outside the door, one of Davenport's men. The guard had short-cropped hair, a neatly trimmed mustache, and a wide, flat, level-eyed face. He wore a black broadcloth suit, knotted black ribbon tie, white shirt, and boots. A six-gun was holstered at his side.
Bodine with the marshal's office. Deputy Osgood sent me to ask the Gordon girl a couple of questions. You saw me before when my partner and I met with a colonel in his suite.
I remember you. I'm Riker, one of Davenport's men.
Oh, glad to know you.
Go on in if you can get by those two old biddies in there. The doc's in there, too.
Matt reached for the door handle. Somebody turned it on the other side, opening the door outward. Dr. Willis came out. A well-respected Tombstone medical man, he had gray hair, gray tufted eyebrows, a gray mustache, and a long, seamed, suntanned face. He carried a black doctor's bag in his hand.
Hello, Matt.
Howdy, Doc. How's Linda Gordon doing?
She'll be all right. She's suffering from the effects of shock and exposure, but she's otherwise unharmed. She's young and strong. The young have great recuperative powers. What she needs now is sleep, lots of it.
Well, I need to talk to her. It'll only take a minute.
Oh, I don't know.
A single question, Doc. Just one. But it's important. I came over from the marshal's office to find out something. It could be important to helping out those other girls, the ones who got took.
Under the circumstances, I suppose I'll have to say yes.
Thanks, Doc.
Willis stepped back inside, Matt following. They entered a bedroom. Within were Linda Gordon and a pair of Tombstone matrons. Mrs. Sanderson and Mrs. Whiteside stood hovering over the girl. They were 50-ish, the wives of well-to-do businessmen. They were leaders of the Church Ladies Auxiliary Do-Gooding Society and a pair of eminently respectable dowagers.
Howdy, ladies.
You don't belong here.
He will only be a minute, and he has my permission.
Matt went to Linda Gordon's bedside, standing on her right. Linda lay sitting up in bed, her back propped up by pillows. Somewhere they'd found a long-sleeved white cotton nightdress for her. Blankets and sheets were drawn up to her waist. Matt took off his hat, holding it in front of him.
Hello, Linda. You remember me from the marshal's office?
She nodded, wide-eyed, solemn.
I need to ask you a couple of questions to clear up one or two points. I wouldn't be bothering you if it wasn't important. It could be a big help.
I'll try.
It may sound silly, but it's not. It could help us get a lead on the outlaws and the girls they took. The woman, Carol. What color hair did she have? Was she a brunette or a blonde?
Red hair. She had red hair. She kept it covered mostly with a hat or scarf, but I saw it once when she was washing it in the basin. Red hair, not bright red or orange, but muddy. That's it, muddy. It was the color of the banks of the Red River, a kind of reddish brown.
That's fine. Now, did Jensen or Sonny Boy ever call her anything but Carol? Ever address her by any other name?
Not that I can remember.
One more. What was she like? Apart from a scar, we know about that. But was she tall or short, thin or fat, fair or dark?
She came from Mexico, I think. That's what all the women from Bear Paw said, though some thought she was a breed. She looked Mexican, dark, kind of fierce looking in a way, apart from the scar. She had a good figure. The men couldn't stop talking about it. The damn fools.
Such language!
That's good, Linda. A big help. Anything else you recall about Carol?
She killed my father.
And the other two, Jensen and Sonny Boy? They ever say anything about where they came from, places they'd been, where they were bound, things like that?
Al Jensen talked a lot. He was a great one for talking. But when you listen to it, he never said anything about himself, never gave anything away. As for Sonny Boy, he took his cue from his uncle, if Jensen was his uncle. He never talked much except when he was drunk, and then he talked a lot of silly nonsense, like a damn fool. That's all I can think of. Sorry, I can't remember anything else.
Well, you've been a big help, Linda. If anything else comes to mind, tell Colonel Davenport or Mr. Stebbins and have them leave word at the front desk for Matt Bodine. That's me. The manager will see I get word. I'll be moseying along. I hope you get well soon. And again, thanks.
I hope you find the outlaws.
I hope so too, Linda.
I hope you kill them.
My!
Kill them all. Jensen and Sonny Boy and Carol and the whole filthy bunch of them.
If I find them, I will. And I'll sure try to find them. That's a promise.
I believe you.
Good night, Linda. Try and get some rest.
Matt stepped away from the bedside.
Good night, ladies.
Good night.
Night, Doc.
Wait up, Matt. I'll go with you. That help any? What you got from the girl?
I think so. It confirms a key point of a story I'm checking. I'll know better later. That Al Jensen Linda spoke of, that's Angus Jones. Black Angus.
I know. Word like that spreads like wildfire. Going after that bunch, Matt?
I'm seriously studying on the subject, Doc.
You'll go. You and Sam both. You're like fire horses. As soon as you hear the alarm bells, you're up and running.
I've killed better men for less.
This scum needs killing.
I'll tell you who is on their trail. Ringo and Brocious. Jones's men killed a friend of theirs. Shot him in the back.
That'll give Black Angus some sleepless nights. Watch yourself, Matt. Be careful out on the trail.
I can take care of myself, Doc.
It's not only Jones you have to look out for. It's Ringo, too. He's a strange one. Surprisingly decent one day and a half-crazed killer the next. With no rhyme or reason for his moods except that he's a bad drunk, and he's drunk most of the time. I once had occasion to be in a saloon with him where he bought me a drink. Needless to say, I accepted gratefully and returned the favor by buying him one, too. Believe it or not, he's an educated man, a reader. Knows Shakespeare and the classics.
Well, he should get along with Sam, then. Sam's a great one for reading, too.
From what I've heard, Ringo doesn't much get along with anyone, except for Brocious and a few others. Riding with him is like playing with dynamite.
I'd rather ride with him than have to ride against him. I've got to be on my way, Doc. Going downstairs?
I'm going to nip next door for a word with Davenport. He's footing the bills for Linda Gordon. Medical bills, lodging, the works. Maybe I can wangle a snifter or two of that good Napoleon brandy he keeps out of view.
Colonel's a pretty free-handed host. It's that Stebbins you gotta watch out for.
Willis went across the hall and knocked on the door of room 206. The door opened, and Stebbins let him in. Matt looked down the long hall toward the rear of the building.
Riker, there's a back stairs there at the end of the hall. Might not be a bad idea to set a guard on it.
Good thought. I'll pass it along.
See ya.
Back in the bar, Matt didn't see Sam. Buckskin Frank Leslie was still on duty tending bar, so Matt went over to him.
Drink?
Quick one. Seen Sam?
I was just talking to him.
Where'd he go?
We were talking, just chewing the fat, when he broke off and said he'd see me later. I thought he saw somebody he knew and went to speak to him. Seemed perfectly natural, so I didn't give a second thought. Besides, I had some customers to take care of, so... Ain't he around?
I don't see him. Did you see who he spotted?
I wasn't looking. Any trouble?
I don't think so.
Sam didn't seem upset or excited or nothing. Of course, he's a hard man to read. That poker face of his don't crack too much. He said he had to take care of something. He'd see me later.
When was this, Frank?
Not more than 10 minutes ago.
Ah, forget it. It's probably nothing. How much for the drink?
On the house.
Thanks.
Matt stood on the broad front porch of the Hotel Erie, standing beside one of the uprights supporting the front balcony. He let his eyes become accustomed to the dimness. Allen Street was not dark, not with all those hotel and saloon front windows ablaze with light. Matt scanned up and down the street looking for Sam, but not finding him. He wasn't particularly worried. Sam was a tough customer and not one to be easily taken. Matt was more puzzled than anything else. Maybe Sam had been called away, or maybe he was on the scent of big game. It remained to be seen which. Matt stepped down into the street. He went to the corner of Allen and 4th Street, peering into front windows and along the boardwalk sidewalks, looking for Sam and not finding him. Working back along the other side of the street, he made his way to 5th Street, again experiencing no success in finding Sam. He started to turn back toward the hotel to wait for Sam there when he caught sight of something across the street on the corner. An orange dot showed in the dark, recessed doorway of a shop that was closed for the night. The glow was at head height, brightening, then dimming. It was the lit end of a cigar being smoked, the smoker's features being wanly underlit, heavy-featured with shadow, outlined with orange highlights. Matt recognized the other man and went to him.
Ringo!
You got good eyes, Bodine.
Any news? Anything breaking?
Not on my end, sorry. I left Curly Bill with the others working the cantinas, looking for word about Chacon and Dorado and all. Bill's a sociable cuss. He knows everybody and likes to talk to people.
But not you, eh, Ringo?
Generally, no. Bill will get more out of them without me hanging over his shoulder, glooming things up. Some of those Mexes figure I got what they call ojo malo.
Ooh, the evil eye. Those folks run to superstition sometime.
Yes and no. I'm not sure, but what there might be something to what they say.
Seen Sam?
No. You miss him?
Well, he wandered off about 10 minutes ago.
Well, I got here about 5 minutes ago. I got to thinking about what you two said about Jones's men making a play for the girl, and I figured I could do more good here, laying back out of sight and keeping an eye out for him.
Well, there were no shots or dead bodies around, so I guess he didn't see them.
Got me figured out pretty well, don't you, Bodine?
I wouldn't presume on that score, Ringo.
Well, maybe your pard got on the trail of something big.
Maybe.
Hell, I'm no good at the waiting game. Let's mosey over to the Big Sky for a drink. I could use one. Bill's supposed to meet me later when he's done making his rounds.
Yeah, all right. Let me leave word for Sam.
Matt motioned to one of the many street urchins loitering on Allen Street, gesturing for him to come over. The boy darted to them. He was about 10, needing a haircut and dressed in ragged clothes.
Go into the Hotel Earl and tell the man behind the front desk that Matt says to tell Sam to meet him at the Big Sky Saloon.
Matt gave him a half dollar and the boy nodded. He took off at a run, angling across the street to the hotel.
Let's walk.
They went east, walking along the south side of Allen Street.
How'd you make out at the hotel?
Matt told Ringo what he'd learned from Linda.
Yeah, that's a point in Chacon's favor.
It's a slim lead, but there's something about Gila that makes me suspect he's telling the truth. Call it a hunch. It's a fact that he was telling me about Pago earlier today, long before Linda showed.
And Curly Bill's got a lot of Mech's friends, especially among the senoritas. If there's anything to Chacon's story, Bill ferreted out. Folks just naturally tend to like him, like talking to him. Bill's a likable cuss, not like me.
Matt and Ringo turned right on 6th Street, going south.
It'll make things a whole lot easier if Gila's telling the truth. Easier, but not easy.
Yeah, we can hash things out at the Big Sky, start making plans. I figure we best hit the trail no later than sunup tomorrow.
I agree. We're gonna have a problem with Osgood. We won't let Gila go, even if we need him.
If we need him, there won't be any problem. You let me handle the deputy.
No killing, mind.
Happy Sand? I wouldn't waste a bullet on him. All I have to do is say boo to Osgood, and he'll fall over in a dead faint.
6th Street was dark and deserted.
Nice night.
Maybe you do have the evil eye.
Matt and Ringo turned left on Toughnut Street, going east. East of 6th Street lay Tombstone's Red Light District. They were blocks of wooden frame houses, serving now as sporting houses. Matt and Ringo's route largely skirted the south fringe of the district to avoid being importuned by numerous streetwalkers working the area. The Big Sky Saloon was southeast of the Red Light District in an enclave of bars, dives, and gin mills. Matt and Ringo entered a border zone between the Red Light District and the saloons. It comprised several square blocks of warehouses and storehouses, now closed for the night, a kind of no man's land. They came to a cross street. From the corner of his eye, Matt saw a group in the next square over glaring at him. He loosed the rawhide loop securing the tops of his guns in the holsters.
Trouble?
The Lincoln County crowd have a mad on against Sam and me for ventilating some of their compadres. It might not be too healthy for you to be seen walking with me.
Ringo walks where he pleases. I got a few enemies of my own in town. Maybe there's some of mine.
We'll find out soon enough.
Matt and Ringo had reached the middle of the block. Suddenly, the square ahead to the east filled with a knot of men. They stood blocking the way, facing west, facing Matt and Ringo. A second group appeared in the square at the opposite end of the street, closing it off.
More company.
We'll make a party of it.
You don't have to mix in. It's not your fight.
Don't talk stupid. I can't back out now, even if I wanted to, and I don't want to.
The group in the rear fanned out, moving forward, walking east along the middle of the street. Matt and Ringo both wore twin guns. They fisted their weapons, leveling them, looking around for the best place to make a stand. A stone's throw away, on the north side of the street, there was a gap between two warehouse buildings, an alley.
Coyote in the alley? Hell no, that's no coyote.
It's not. It's Sam.
You sure? I'd hate to go into an alley and meet the wrong coyote.
That's the right coyote. It's a signal we've used in the past.
And what are we waiting for? Things are about to get hot out here on the street.
The street was ill-lit and dim. What little light there was reached only a few feet into the alley. Beyond that, the alley was black dark with a faint glow at the opposite end where it opened onto Toughnut Street.
Let's go.
Matt and Ringo ducked into the alley. It was 8 feet wide, hemmed in on both sides by warehouse walls 2 stories high. They crouched low to present less of a target to anyone shooting blindly into the alley.
Psst! Matt!
Don't shoot, Ringo! It's Sam!
Matt and Ringo stopped just short of a body sprawled on the ground.
He was waiting here at this.
Sam held up a double-barreled shotgun.
Who is he?
One of the New Mexico crowd. So are the ones out in the street. Waco's whipped them.
Where'd you disappear to, Sam?
Tell you later. The hombre on the ground was waiting for you. The plan must have been to stampede you into the alley, straight into a load of double-aught buck.
He dead?
No. I snuck up on him and knocked him out.
Should've killed him, bushwhacking bastard.
I think you broke his neck.
Hope so.
Ringo peeked around the corners of the alley mouth, keeping watch. Men with drawn guns advanced from both ends of the street, closing in on the alley. They moved slowly, warily.
They're holding off, like they're waiting for something.
They're waiting for the bushwhack kill. So, let's not disappoint them.
Right.
No! No, don't! Oh! Got him!
Sam broke the shotgun, shucking out the spent cartridges and loading up with some fresh ones.
The ambusher had a pocket full of shells. Let's put them to good use.
Sam stepped forward, outlining his silhouette in the alley mouth, but hanging back so his face and form were hidden in shadow.
Got them! Both of them!
A couple of gunmen nearest the alley straightened up, starting toward it.
Nice work, Clem!
Wait! That ain't Clem!
Two men were hammered flat. The third only caught the edge of the fan. Sam stepped back to safety, standing with his back flattened against a wall as he broke the smoking shotgun and reloaded. Matt and Ringo were already in action, sheltering behind their respective corners of the alley mouth, reaching out to shoot around them. Matt knelt on one knee, turned to the east, where dark outlines of figures shifted and darted, spectral in the thin, misty drizzle. Two men scrambled across the street from its south side to its north side. Matt took aim. They never made it to safety. Ringo stood beside the wall, shoulder touching it, body turned at an angle. His arm was extended like that of a duelist, gun barrel protruding beyond the wall's edge as he coolly aimed into a knot of figures clustered together west of the alley. The gunmen scattered for safety. They returned fire, joining in concert and beginning to really pour it on. A couple of gunmen at the far ends of the street exercised the better part of valor by discreetly absenting themselves from the melee, slinking off into the night.
They're stalled for now. Let's vamoose!
You go! I'll lay down some covering fire!
Sam and Ringo withdrew, easing back into the depths of the alley. They halted just short of where the opposite end of the alley emptied out on Toughnut Street. Cradling the reloaded shotgun in his arms, Sam gingerly peeked around the corner of the north alley mouth, surveying the street. He looked right and left, east and west. Toughnut Street seemed clear. This stretch of it was largely shuttered and closed by night, and the lightly falling rain had discouraged pedestrians from taking the air. Mainly, though, Tombstone folks knew to make themselves scarce when gunfire erupted, a too frequent occurrence in the boomtown. Matt faded back to join Sam and Ringo at the north end of the alley. The trio piled out of the alley to the left.
Cease fire! Cease fire! Follow them! Don't let them get away!
As the chasing gunman neared the alleyway, Sam pivoted and faced them with the shotgun leveled. They ran headlong into a withering scythe of 12-gauge shot that chopped them in the middle. Sam quickly dove for cover. Gunfire tore into the spot he had just quit. Three men stood at the end of Toughnut Street shooting at Sam, Matt, and Ringo. One was an oversized individual with a barrel-shaped torso, a 10-gallon hat, and grotesque woolly chaps. Even in silhouette, the signature outline of Waco Brindle was unmistakable. His massive form took up much of the open space at the end of the street. Seeing an opportunity, Mac took quick aim at the man. Three shots planted themselves in the center of Waco's torso. He lay there on his back, face up and motionless. The rest of his bunch, what was left of them, had no more appetite for fights. They hurried away.
Let's get out of here. I don't want to have to explain this to the law when the sheriff gets back to town.
The three of them melted away into the night. They wove a wide and circuitous course down the back streets and side alleys, distancing themselves from the scene of the gun battle.
Now that we're clear, Sam, tell me how you came to be in the alley in time to save our bacon.
When I was in the Hotel Earl barroom, I spotted Sid Felder trying to look like he belonged there. Sid's a longtime Black Angus gang member.
Your hunch was right about Jones making another try for the girl.
Looks like, considering Felder was prowling around the same hotel that Linda Gordon's in on the very night she arrived in town. He was with some other fellow I didn't recognize. A sneaky-looking stream bean kind of hombre. They were going out of the barroom when I saw them. I don't think they saw me. I tried to follow, but there were too many people in the way, and by the time I reached the lobby, they were gone. I went outside in time to see them turning the corner on 4th Street, going north towards Fremont. I ran after, but when I reached 4th Street, they were nowhere to be seen. I prowled around the saloons there for some time to see if I could raise them, but no luck. I went back to the hotel, saw you and Ringo standing on the corner of 5th Street. You started towards 6th Street. A man stood there watching you go. One of the bunch we bucked earlier today at Waco's. I hung back, waiting to see what he'd do. He got on a horse and rode down 5th Street. I ran after. No question he was dogging you. He followed you on to the next cross street down.
We stopped a couple of times to see which way you went, so I was able to keep up with them. He met up with a half dozen or so men on the street below Toughnut. I doubled back to Toughnut going east. I figured on turning right at the end of the street and going south to intercept you. Halfway across the block, I saw the alley. It looked like a good shortcut. I was light-footing it down the alley when I came across the shotgunner. Nobody had to draw me a picture to tell me what that was all about. I knocked him out, grabbed the gun, and went looking for you. I stuck my head out the alley, saw Waco's men closing off both ends of the street, and knew they were springing the trap. I gave out with our old coyote call to get your attention. The rest, you know.
You boys handle yourself all right.
You're no slouch with the plow handles yourself.
Yeah, thanks for tying in with us, Ringo. That was a tight squeeze. Don't know how it would have gone without your gun siding us.
Yeah, what else could I do? I had to throw in to save my own neck.
Well, thanks all the same. I owe you one.
That goes for me, too.
Help me get Dorado and Quirt Fane, and we'll be even up.
Hell, we'd do that anyway.
It stopped raining around midnight. An hour or so later, Ringo and Curly Bill rode up to the jailhouse. They had two extra horses with them. Ringo and Bill tied up the horses and walked up to the jail. Assistant Deputy Osgood sat upright at his desk, rigid, his hand on a gun which lay on the desktop. He relaxed visibly when he recognized the visitors, the quivering tension going out of him, mostly. He took his hand off the gun. A bottle and glass stood on the desk, too. He poured a drink, draining it in one gulp.
Ain't you ever heard of knocking?
Easy does it, Deputy. You're wound up tighter than the mainspring of a Swiss watch.
Some mighty funny business going on tonight. Unfunny, funny business. I've been chasing around half the night cleaning up after that big kill down over to Toughnut Street.
Don't blame me. I was at the Toro Loco Cantina when it happened. I got a room full of witnesses who'll swear they saw me there, too.
Witnesses? Mexes?
Who the hell else you expect to find in the Toro Loco Cantina? Swedes?
You can't hang that one on us. What do we care if Waco Brindle and his Lincoln County pards have a falling out and shoot each other full of holes?
What are you getting yourself in an uproar over Waco and the rest of them skunks for? You ought to be glad they're headed for Boot Hill. Claim jumping will decline overnight by 110% in these parts.
I got a feeling Matt Bodine and his Indian friend are somewhere at the bottom of it. I'm sure of it. They killed the Vollen gang, and Vollen and them were thick with Waco.
The great detective.
Why don't you ask them about it, instead of grousing at us?
I got better things to do than chase after them two, Bill.
Like what? Kill another bottle?
Oh, now that you mention it, yeah.
We'll help.
No, I'm doing fine by myself.
I can see that. There ain't much left.
Ringo walked up to where Osgood was sitting and lifted the whiskey bottle.
Hey, just a dang minute now.
Relax, you live longer.
Ringo took a long pull from the bottle.
Damn, that is lousy.
Why'd you drink it then?
It's the only bottle on hand. Why do you drink it?
Same reason.
You want a taste, Bill?
I don't mind.
Ringo tossed the bottle to Curly Bill.
Oh, this is lousy.
Curly Bill settled the bottle down on the desk. Osgood grabbed it, holding it to the light.
I left you some.
A mouthful.
Ringo wandered behind the marshal's desk, eyeing the cells in the rear of the building. There were no lights in the densely shadowed area. What dim illumination there was came from lamps burning in the front office.
What do you want, anyhow? You got a reason for being here except to mouth off and drink my whiskey?
We're here to do you a favor.
That's a good one. A real knee slapper. Since when are you boys in the favor doing business?
Since Bob Farr got killed. We're here to take the bandito off your hands.
Thought it was something like that. You ain't doing me a favor. You want me to do you one.
Have it any way you like. We want Gila Chacon.
Not a chance.
We got some new evidence in the Black Angus case. I've been asking around, and it turns out everybody knows about Gila and Don Carlos and Carmen. Everybody in Mextown, that is. It's a real famous love story or hate story, call it what you will. They even wrote songs about it. Everybody knows about the slave auction in Pago, too, and how Don Carlos runs it. All you gotta do is ask the right folks, they'll tell you.
It's a sure bet Black Angus is taking those girls to Pago to sell. A sure bet Dorado and Court Fane will be there too.
It's a sure bet that Gila Chacon won't be there. You two want to go to Pago to kill Dorado and Court? Why, you go right ahead. Nobody's stopping you. Chacon stays here.
What the hell? It's not as if other prisoners haven't escaped from this jail before. I could name more than one hombre who bought his way out of here.
I don't know nothing about that. I ain't saying it's so, but I ain't saying it ain't so. I just plain ain't saying.
If the marshal was here, he'd do it.
If Johnny Behan was here, he'd surely do it.
Well, they ain't here. If you feel that way about it, you can just wait till they get back and ask them.
We're in a hurry.
Think of them poor little gals. They're in a mighty tough spot. Their folks dead, killed. Captives of a band of cold-blooded killers carrying them off to what they call a fate worse than death. No hope, no help in sight. Not knowing if anybody is even aware of their plight.
You are the rat for the nugget, Bill. You're piling it on so high. Put yourself in my place. In case you ain't noticed, this Chacon ain't no ordinary prisoner. He's a killer, slated to hang come Saturday. He ain't here for to get his neck stretched. Folks are going to be mighty sore and looking to take it out on the man responsible. And that ain't going to be me.
Save your breath, John. He's mule stubborn. When he gets that way, there ain't no making him see reason.
What do you bet?
Ringo picked up Osgood's gun and pointed it at him.
Now, hold on, Ringo.
Some folks just won't listen to reason.
Quit your fooling, Ringo. You ain't gonna shoot me.
Ringo thumbed the hammer back.
I killed Lou Hancock because he made the mistake of insulting me by refusing my offer to buy him a drink. Believe me, deputy, when I tell you that I wanted him to take that drink a whole hell of a lot less than I want Gila Chacon. Now come around from behind that desk and don't cut up, and you might come out of this alive.
Osgood stood with hands up, face even more sour than usual and looking more than a little bit sick, too. Curly Bill picked up the jailer's big key ring from where it was hanging on a peg on the wall and went to Gila's cell, fitting the oversized key in the lock, unlocking it. Gila stepped out and nodded to Bill.
Oh, gracias, amigo.
We ain't amigos yet. Whether we are or not remains to be seen. So don't you go cutting up none neither. I reckon you can still travel with a bullet through the elbow or kneecap.
Poke Muldoon was sitting up on his bunk with his hat on his head and his feet on the floor, eyes shining. The remorseful miner tensed but remained steadfastly oblivious of all that was going on, keeping his face to the wall. Ringo marched Osgood at gunpoint into the bandito's now empty cell.
This is what we call a transfer of custody, Gila. Instead of being his prisoner, you're mine.
As you wish, senor. Anything to get out of this filthy hole.
Ringo poked Osgood's back with the muzzle of the pistol.
In you go, deputy.
Osgood stepped into the cell.
This is a switch. Me locking up a lawman. That's a horse on you, deputy.
Let's go.
Hey, fellas. How about taking me with you?
Ringo and Curly Bill exchanged glances.
What do you say, Bill?
Poke's a good old boy. It's a shame to let him sit in here and rust. He can shoot, too.
What do you say, Poke? You feel like taking a ride down to Mexico way?
Ringo, I'd ride to hell for a hot coal to light my cigar with if it'd get me out of here. Hallelujah.
You're making a big mistake, Muldoon.
The biggest mistake I made was getting caught. That won't happen again.
You're riding to your death in Mexico, all of you. What can a handful of you do against a whole army of slave hunters?
Now you just hush up, little deputy, and try them iron bars on for size.
Stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage, the poet said. But that's not the way to bet it.
What the hell are you talking about, John?
Never mind.
You gotta stop reading all them books. It ain't healthy. Makes you talk crazy.
Ringo, Curly Bill, Gila, and Polk went into the front office.
Por favor, senores, my gun. It has been with me for a long time. I would hate to lose it now, when I shall soon have need of it.
I'd like to hold on to my hog leg too, Ringo. It suits me.
Where do they keep your guns?
Locked up in the side drawer of the desk. The big one on the right, like a locker drawer.
Curly Bill went to Osgood, holding the key ring up in front of his face.
Which key opens the drawer, deputy?
If I have to shoot the lock off, a ricochet might hit you right between the eyes.
The small shiny steel key.
Curly Bill walked back to the office, separated the key from the others, and fitted in the locked drawer of the desk. Within lay a heap of gun belts and knives. Bill hauled out an armful and dropped them on the desk.
That one there, in the Buscadero holster.
No guns for you, not yet. Maybe we'll get to know you better. You take it, Bill.
Gila's gun was a long-barreled .44 and a soft leather holster, Mexican Buscadero style. The gun belt was buckled closed. Curly Bill looped it over his left shoulder.
I'll take real good care of it for you, Gila. You won't be needing it just yet.
Tombstone is a dangerous town, senor.
You won't be staying long. We'll be leaving soon.
The sooner the better.
Okay if I get my gun?
Help yourself.
Polk picked up a well-worn gun belt with an equally well-worn Colt 45 in the holster. He buckled it low on his hips, below the swelling bulge of his big gut.
First time I've felt fully dressed in a coon's age.
Ringo used a pencil to scrawl something on the back of a wanted circular.
What's that, John?
A receipt. I just wrote that I received one prisoner and signed my name. That makes everything nice and legal.